Are you still mixing station gas and oil for your string trimmer, leaf blower, or chainsaw? Eliminate the mess and the guesswork with TruFuel, the original pre-mixed two-cycle fuel. TruFuel is ethanol-free and precision-engineered for small engines, improving performance and extending the life of your outdoor power equipment. And TruFuel is available for both two- and four-cycle engines. Empower your equipment with TruFuel. Available at your local Home and Garden Center today.
Introducing the S&D Podcast Channel, your one-stop source for all types of podcasts. We are always on the look for new podcasts to join our channel. If there is any topic you would like to discuss, contact us now. We can be reached on all social media, such as Facebook, Twitter, and or Instagram. You can also contact us by email or leave us a voicemail at 516-570-9248. So make sure to contact us now so you can start your podcast soon.
And now, the Bearded Production presents the most awesome podcast to ever embrace a pair of headphones, Sarasso and the Beard. And now, here are your hosts, Nick Sarasso and Jose the Talking Beard Rivera.
And welcome to Sarasso and the Beard, the first podcast episode of Sarasso and the Beard. I'm Nick Sarasso.
And my name's Jose Rivera.
Also known as the Talking Beard. And just to give a little bit of background before we start talking about the MLB and the recent trade deadline, as we'll give our breakdown of the trades, is a little background on both myself and Jose. The two of us have been announcing for the Staten Island Yankees, a minor league affiliate team of the New York Yankees. I've been doing it for 3 years. Jose has been covering the Staten Island Yankees for 4 years. And as well as the two of us announcing for the Staten Island Yankees, we have both been on FM radio, WSIA 88.9 FM, for the last 4 years each. So we both have been together on sports shows, on each other's sports shows, announcing for the Staten Island Yankees for the last couple of years. So we both have been doing podcasts together, and now we're finally getting a podcast together. So I'm excited for this, and I think our fans as well, who have been listening to us for the last couple of years, it's a nice moment.
Yeah, this has been a long time coming. Nick has been the host of Sports in the Nick of Time that you can catch every Friday at 10 a.m. on 88.9 FM. I was the host of the Talking Beard Show every Friday at 1 p.m. on 88.9 FM. Like he said, we've been on each other's shows, so it's finally nice to collab together, finally. The fans have been asking for it. The masses have been asking for it. I heard even Kanye West was asking for it. That might be a little bit of a stretch. But if he knew us, he'd probably be asking for it, too. Just so you know, though, Sarasso and the Beard, we'll be coming at you every week. We will have a new episode posted for you. We'll cover a variety of topics all across the MLB, NBA, NHL, NFL. If you want us to cover it, you name it. And just so you know, participation is rewarded on this show. So if you want to mention a comment, a question for us to answer, or you even just want to get your thought across, email us at sarassoandabeard@gmail.com. Leave your name and where you're from, and we'll give you a shout-out on the show. And like Nick said, today's episode, all about the MLB trade deadline. So without further ado, let's start breaking down this hectic and really exciting 2017 trade deadline.
Yeah, this had a lot more activity than in 2016, and exactly as you said, really exciting. And we'll start with the New York Yankees, you know, the team that was in a wild card spot right now, and they've made a bunch of moves in July. They traded with the White Sox to get Todd Frazier, David Robinson, Tommy Canell, and now a recent move right before the trade deadline of acquiring Sonny Gray from the Oakland Athletics. So, Jose, what is your take on the Yankees acquiring, especially Gray?
I love it. Sonny Gray, to me, you know, he's a good pitcher in the American League. You know, he's one of those guys that's going to succeed everywhere he goes. And you know what? A little bit after that trade was made official, I wrote on Facebook, congrats to the New York Yankees. They won the AL East. This move for Sonny Gray, to me, wraps up and puts the bow on the Yankees making the playoffs. A couple of days ago, the Yankees were, maybe they'll make the playoffs. Maybe they'll get a wild card spot. To me, this is a move that bolsters the New York Yankees that was already a good playing team, and it makes them the top team in the AL East. I don't like the way the Boston Red Sox look right now. I don't think they have enough pitching. I'm pretty sure we'll get to them in a second later on in the podcast. But I don't like the way the Red Sox are stacked up right now, at least against the Yankees. The Yankees didn't have to give up Gleyber Torres. They didn't have to give up Clint Frazier. They gave up three prospects that two of them might be bust in the end. James Kaprielian, very injury prone. Mateo, he's been a top prospect for, what, years now? And he hasn't come up. Yes, you can cut him some slack. They don't have many positions for him. But in the end, he's never amounted to the hype that the Yankees have been giving him over the past couple of years. So he traded away those two guys. He traded away Fowler, who we didn't get to really see much because he injured his knee. But by the way, that knee injury looked pretty gruesome when he suffered it. So Oakland really is taking three lottery tickets on three guys who we don't know much about in terms of potential, for their top ace. I think Oakland could have gotten a lot more back, you know, if they just demanded it. But, you know, kudos to the Yankees. Brian Cashman is a great GM. And you know what? They, you know, team said, we want Torres, we want Frazier. Cashman said, no, you'll get this and you'll like it. And the Yankees went ahead and did that trade. To me, just makes total sense. The bullpen is a lot better now. You have relievers, so Betances doesn't have to get overworked. To me, the Yankees have just won the AL East by acquiring Sonny Gray. I still don't see the Yankees winning a World Series, but at least I know now they definitely make the playoffs and they win the AL East.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to commit to saying that they're going to win the AL East yet from the Sonny Gray move, but I love the move on the standpoint of Gray's on the team for the next couple of years, on arbitration years, and especially when you go into the future on all the top free agents that come in 2017 and especially 2018, it's very important to have low salary guys on your team, like an arbitration on Gray. And I think the big thing that you said was that, you know, this is a team that has a ton of position spots. Didi Gregorius at shortstop, Stalin Castro at second base, Greg Bird probably at first base, Gary Sanchez at catcher, and we're seeing that outfield really assemble with Aaron Judge in it. So trading away guys like Blake Rutherford when it came to the White Sox, or Mateo, and, you know, you have these you don't have these open spots that you need to add a prospect or a top prospect in, so you can deal these guys and get the star pitcher you need right now to really contend, because now they have a formidable rotation. That was something that was the big question all year long. You know, do they have enough starting pitchers? Well, they have a good enough bullpen that they only have to go five or six innings, and they have, you know, Sorino and now Gray, and you got enough talent on that pitching staff to really make a contention for the playoffs. It's just don't be the wild card team.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing is, though, and this is just my personal opinion, I always felt like Sonny Gray was a little bit overrated. I mean, just a little tad. Like, if there was a meter of overrated and a great pitcher, he's slightly on the needle towards the overrated side, in my opinion. But, like I said, you didn't have to give up any of the big-time prospects to get him. Clint Frazier's still a part of this team. Gleyber Torres is still a part of the future. You know, you really have to tip your cap to Brian Cashman. For years, you know, growing up, especially as a Met fan and hating the Yankees growing up, you know, I always thought Brian Cashman was this smug GM who just had an open checkbook. All he had to do was just write the numbers on a check, and guys came flocking to the Yankees. But since the passing away of George Steinbrenner, you've really seen Cashman take over this team and really see what he can do, acquiring prospects, keeping the right ones, getting the right guys under control. I don't think any of this happens if it was under the old regime, but now under the new regime, Cashman has more control, and you really have to give Brian Cashman a lot of credit for what he's done with this team over the past couple of years. A lot of people predicted that the dark ages were going to hover over the Yankees like a dark cloud in Yankee Stadium, but it hasn't been that way since. A lot of people had a negative outlook ever since Jeter retired. It hasn't been, and I think a big part of that is because of Brian Cashman.
And Yankees also made one other, I guess it's more of a minor move compared to every big move that they had, but they retired Jaime Garcia from the Minnesota Twins. And on the Twins' standpoint, I mean, they only got Garcia a week ago from the Braves and then immediately trading him away. The Twins also traded away their closer, Brandon Kaiser. Have the Twins really established themselves as giving up on the wild card this year?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really puzzled by the Minnesota Twins. I mean, this is a team that was in first place for, what, the first 2 months of the season? You know, they still have a lot to play for, and I still think the wild card is in within reach. I think the Twins, you know, they have a good bullpen behind Kinsler. So trading him away, maybe that was their way of saying, hey, we can get something back for one of our, you know, for our depth. You know, trading away our closer, we still have other relievers. They still have Glenn Perkins. You know, they still have other relievers that can fill that void. So for the Twins, I think they're a team that's pretty smart, and they realize, hey, you know, this year may not be our year. So let's keep an eye on the future still while we still try and compete. We're not giving up fully, but we are going to give up some pieces that we can move around. To me, Jaime Garcia, I didn't like that trade. That's the only thing I think the Yankees did wrong at the deadline. You know, bringing in a guy who's a very injury-prone pitcher. You know, a guy, I don't know if I want a guy like Garcia pitching in Yankee Stadium every fifth day or even come playoff time. To me, I don't think Garcia is that good of an MLB pitcher. I think he's a four or five starter, which you can argue the Yankees actually need a four to five starter. But is Garcia better than Jordan Montgomery? No, he's not. I don't see it, at least right now. Is he better than CeCe Sabathia? No, Sabathia's actually playing pretty well right now. I mean, those are the guys that I throw Garcia in the mix with, because one of these guys are going to have to sit on the bench. Who's going to be the odd man out? And it looks like it's going to be Jordan Montgomery, and I don't quite agree with that based on Garcia's numbers so far this year. and last year as well. But going back to the Twins, though, yeah, it's very puzzling. I mean, this is a team that, you know, they made that wild run when they broke out. No one expected them the first year that Paul Molitor was there. Made that wild run, finished a game out of the wild card to end the year. Last year, they were terrible. This year, they're back up again. To me, this is a team that's right in flux of a rebuild. They're good. They're not good enough yet to compete with the big boys, teams like Cleveland, teams like Houston, teams like the Yankees, and they're realizing that and saying, let's scale back a little bit. We're still competing, but we're not going full-blown effort out there.
Yeah, you know, they're 5 games under 500 now. They're 7 games out of the division. This was a team that, you know, was the division leader for so long into the season, and I think they realized what they have in front of them. There are so many teams contending for the wild card, and they could either try and shoot for it and miss epically, or trade what you have right now, try and get better onto next season, and really set yourself up for a better year. And I think that's the perfect move to do if you're the Minnesota Twins. Maybe they should have included Ervin Santana in a possible trade, because the year he's having is top five in the Cy Young. But as far as every other piece that they dealt away, it's all right moves by Minnesota. You know, heading to the National League for a moment. And the Texas Rangers and the Los Angeles Dodgers made a big trade on the trade deadline, trading away Yu Darvish to the Los Angeles Dodgers. I was a first big part on the move for the Dodgers. They needed another starting pitcher, and they got a big name on that one. But even with the addition of the Yu Darvish, I mean, the Dodgers right now, the best record in baseball, completely dominating the MLB. They're 76-32 on the year. They're 14 games up on the Arizona Diamondbacks, who are fantastic, would be leading almost every division in baseball, except the NL West. Do the Dodgers have a chance, in your mind, to get the best record in baseball with the addition of Yu Darvish?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they're already on pace for, what, over 110 wins right now? I mean, I can see them definitely going for it. I mean, you're looking at a rotation. Right now, Clayton Kershaw's on the DL. But when Kershaw comes back, you're looking at a rotation of Kershaw, Yu Darvish, and then don't sleep on the other guys either. Kenta Maeda turning it around right now. Alex Wood, an all-star this year. And, you know, a good pitcher. You have guys like Brandon McCarthy, Rich Hill. This rotation was stacked even without Yu Darvish. And now you add a dominant righty like Yu Darvish. To me, that's simply phenomenal. The only worry I have is come playoff time, you know, Kershaw, has he exercised those playoff demons? I think he has. I think he's gotten over the playoff hump, the proverbial playoff hump. And then Kershaw's going to do fantastic come playoff time. Darvish, small sample size, had a bad start last year for Texas in the playoffs. We don't know how it's going to transition this year. But National League, easier hitting to get through. I think you're looking at one of the most dangerous 1-2 punches in maybe in recent memory of baseball. When you look at Kershaw and Darvish and you think about it come playoff time, because this is what we're thinking about. Dodgers are making the playoffs. There's no question if ands or buts. They're going to win the division. Come playoff time, do you want to play a best-of-five series when you have to face Kershaw and Darvish twice? And then the third possible starter is Alex Wood, who's not a slob either. The Dodgers, to me, have elevated themselves from the pack. To me, they're the team to beat in the National League now. They're the World Series favorites, not the Houston Astros anymore. To me, the Dodgers are the team to beat. This is a team that looks like they're a team of destiny, winning, what, 30 out of the last 35, Cody Bellinger having a terrific year. To me, getting Yu Darvish, not only Yu Darvish, because they made some other bullpen moves too. I'm sure we're going to get to that in a second. But to me, the moves they made said, we're here, we know we're good enough to win the World Series, now we're going to.
Yeah, this is the best team in the MLB right now. I don't think they're going to finish with the best record in the MLB, and I think that's because Kershaw's on the DL, and when you're without your ace and the best pitcher in all in baseball, I mean, you're going to lose maybe a couple games, if any, for the Dodgers of lately. But as far as a playoff team, I mean, wow, this pitching staff. Kershaw, Yu Darvish, you said Alex Wood, who's an all-star, and Rich Hill. I mean, Rich Hill is extremely underrated. In July, he just won the NL Pitcher of the Month for going 4-0 and having a low 1 ERA. I mean, this team is set, and Kenta Maeda is pitching well right now. He just had a start against the Atlanta Braves recently. Kellen Jensen in the bullpen. I would have loved to see the Dodgers add an extra bullpen piece. I really don't think they went that route. They acquired Sergi Romo, but, I mean, this guy isn't what he was when it was coming towards the Giants playoff series.
Well, the Dodgers did pick up Tony Cingrani and Tony Watson, the two lefties in the bullpen. To me, that was the moves they needed to make. You bring in two lefties into that bullpen. Again, you put those guys in. You allow Jensen to actually pitch in the ninth inning. I mean, there was a great article the other day about how Jensen's not picking up saves because he's too busy pitching in the seventh, eighth inning for the Dodgers. You move Jensen back, and I think Watson and Cingrani, to me, are, I mean, they're not the lights-out lefties, but they're going to do damage in that bullpen. I think the Dodgers are really looking complete right now.
They're pretty good lefties. Watson, I expected a lot more from this year after he was going to take the closing role for the Pittsburgh Pirates, and he lost the dick. So he's not the pitcher that I expected him to be, but I think getting him back to out of that closing role will be key for the Dodgers as well. But overall, I mean, the Dodgers are extremely impressive this season, and they just continue to win. They win 9 in a row, then they lose 1, they win another 9 in a row. It's incredible the run that they're on these last 50 games and how impressive they've been. And they're doing this right now also without Clayton Kershaw at the end of the day. And Adrian Gonzalez is on the DL. He's been on the DL all season.
Yeah, a lot of people forgot about Gonzalez thanks to Mr. Bellinger over there at first base.
I mean, it's sort of simple to forget when Bellinger's killing it this year, and the two rookies, Bellinger and Aaron Judge, they're just dominating the MLB. And going on to another team, though, that was making some big moves, we talked about the Boston Red Sox acquiring Eduardo Nunez. You know, the Giants really weren't able to sell a lot more points than they were really looking to. You saw Johnny Cueto hit the DL, Jeff Samardzija not being traded. You know, did the Giants really fail at the trade deadline?
Yeah, I mean, I think they did. But you're also looking at a team that wasn't expecting to be sellers at the trade deadline, too. You know, this is a team, they still have Cueto under contract, obviously, for more years. They still have Samardzija under contract for a couple more years. When I look at the Giants, they're not a team that needs to sell. They could have sold at the deadline because of the bad year they're having. But this is a team that had a lot of injuries to start the year. They played really bad baseball. Now, one injury or two less and one or two good weeks back in April and May, to me, changes the Giants' season around. Come next year, I expect this team to be back at the top of the NL West no matter what. Why? Because they have guys like Cueto, because they have guys like Samardzija. Good teams just don't disappear over a year span. Yes, the Giants are having a terrible year, but I think the Giants are one or two quick free agent signing replacement away from being the dominant team that they were over the past couple of years. I don't think you have to sell all the time just because you're in last place. I think you have to assess the situation. If you realize that you're a team going down the toilet and you realize your dynasty run is over, then yeah, you should sell. But for the Giants, they had a bad year. They're not a bad team. They're not heading for a rebuild. Don't sell if you don't have to. Regroup next year.
And sticking with the NL West, the Arizona Diamondbacks, I mean, they're 62 wins. And I mean, they're 14 games behind the Dodgers because the Dodgers are just going so off this year. But the Diamondbacks made a big move themselves. They acquired J.D. Martinez from the Detroit Tigers, and they really didn't give up much for J.D. Martinez, and this is a big move for them because the Diamondbacks have really struggled against left-handed pitching, and J.D. has been raking against lefties, so this is a big move for the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, I mean, J.D. Martinez continues to be one of the most underrated players in baseball. Doesn't get a lot of love last year in terms of the great year that he had. Didn't get a lot back in return at the trade deadline for the Diamondbacks. They may have stole that one. The Diamondbacks were my sleeper team coming into this year, so I'm very proud of them and very happy that they're probably going to take a wild card spot. But yeah, I mean, you can argue that the Diamondbacks are right there with any of the other division leaders across baseball if they weren't playing in the NL West. And yes, this is a wild card team, but they shouldn't be treated as a scrappy wild card team. And you're looking at a possible first round matchup if the Diamondbacks can get the wild card, if they win that one game playoff, of the Dodgers and Diamondbacks squaring off in the first round. Two of the biggest threats in the National League so far record-wise this year could be going at it in a five-game series. And to me, that's pretty huge.
Yeah, it's certainly a great division matchup. So I think that's something that we sort of miss in the playoffs a couple times, where it's more out-of-team divisions are having some rivalries, like the Cubs and Dodgers or Washington in, with these three-headed teams in the National League. So it's really nice to go back to almost like the basics of inner divisions in the playoffs trying to go against each other, and that's what we could certainly see as a matchup when it comes to the NLDS. Sticking with, you know, fill in the blank on this one for me, Jose. Blank should have dealt who?
The Royals should have dealt either Hosmer or Moustakas. It's very difficult to watch Kansas City right now. Yes, and this is what, and it's funny because usually I root for these small market teams. I'm like, yeah, you know, they're catching fire, do well. And I'm watching the Royals go on this 8-9 game win streak, whatever it was. And all I could think of was, oh man, this is possibly, and I know this is going to sound terrible, this is the worst thing that could have happened to Kansas City over the last couple of weeks. Not anybody getting hurt, not anything going bad, not losing, but winning is ruining the Royals' season. Why? Because we talk about it all the time. Hosmer, Moustakas, they're free agents at the end of the year. Next year, I believe it's who? Lorenzo Cain, and I think Escobar too, and then Perez is gonna, his contract is up soon too. Yet also, to me, the Royals are in such a terrible spot right now where if you're the GM, what do? Your fan base realizes there's a chance to win. Your players are obviously playing to win. How do you sell your fan base, hey, I know we're on a 9-game win streak, we're right there in the wild card, we have the second spot, we can make the playoffs, we're a magical team, we never give up, we can make another World Series run, but I have to trade away Hosmer and Moustakas. To me, that is where the Royals went wrong. Hosmer's not coming back. I'm sorry to break that to Royals fans. I'm sorry to break that to anybody who likes Eric Hosmer on the Royals. He's not coming back, and I'll give you two reasons why. Well, I should say one reason. He has two names. His name is Scott Boris. That guy is not going to keep him in Kansas City. Moustakas, I can see coming back, but then you can argue that if they sign Moustakas, then they're not going to keep Lorenzo Cain, and then they can't keep Escobar. It's a giant mess for the Royals. I hope that they figured out who they want to keep and who they can keep affordably-wise. Honestly, they got lucky. Alex Gordon took a hometown discount last year when he hit free agency, the fact that he came back.
And he's hitting 200.
He's playing terribly, but he did take a hometown discount. Probably could have gotten a lot more money somewhere else. I know the outfield market was kind of weird last year, but he could have gone somewhere else and made bank, and he didn't. He stayed in Kansas City. Not everybody's Alex Gordon. Not everybody's going to do that. Hosmer's going to get paid. Hosmer deserves to get paid. And again, for Kansas City, if you look at it, the fact that they don't trade Hosmer and they don't trade Moustakas, yes, you can still get a draft pick because the Kansas City Royals are not going to be over the threshold. They're not going to get penalized. This team, you know, is not going to, doesn't even make money off their hot dogs and peanut sales. I mean, this is a team that's not, doesn't have a lot of payroll, so they don't have to worry about not getting the qualifying offer. They're obviously going to give a qualifying offer to Hosmer and Moustakas, and when teams sign them, because you know they will, teams are not going to shy away from them because of the qualifying offer, they're going to get a draft pick for them. And for the Royals, you're thinking, okay, two possible first-round draft picks. That's okay, but you could have gotten more if you dealt them somewhere else. Now, again, both markets were a little weird. You didn't hear a lot of teams knocking on the door for the Royals, but I also believe that that's because you knew these guys were going to come at a high price tag. So for the Royals, to answer your question finally, coming all the way back around, the Royals should have dealt Moustakas or Hosmer, preferably more Hosmer.
Jason Vargas, he's on the final year of a contract.
Yeah, I mean, or even a guy like that. I mean, the Royals should have done something. I get it. You're in it. You're feeling it. But realistically, I don't think the Royals are going to beat the Astros. I don't think the Royals are going to beat the Yankees. I don't see the Royals beating the Red Sox, come playoff time at least. I don't see them beating Cleveland. So what are you really playing for, that one-game wild card? And again, it's tough because they're right there. How do you tell your fan base, hey, we're right there, and then smack them in the face and trading a star player, a fan favorite nonetheless, like Hosmer or Moustakas? But I think that's when you have to step back and understand things are going to get tough for the next couple of years for the Kansas City Royals. They enjoyed that little 2 to 3 year window that they had while these players growing together and, you know, making it to two World Series, winning one of them. But all dynasties have to come to an end, and you got to learn when to retool, because otherwise you end up like the Philadelphia Phillies.
I was about to say, this reminds me a lot like the Philadelphia Phillies, because, you know, they waited an extra year and they're still rebuilding and they're nowhere close and they're still got years to go. And for the Royals, you had a choice, which is, you know, tell your fan base we're going to compete one last year, because obviously everyone knows we can't re-sign any of these guys for the money they want, because even if we try and give them an offer, teams can blow them out of the water at the end of the day, and we see that plenty of times that teams leave that so-called hometown discount because they're getting well millions more to go somewhere else. But, you know, this is one of those things where if you traded away the pieces, it would have sucked for the Royals, it's for the Royal fans especially, but it's a quicker rebuild. It's almost like what the White Sox are doing at this point. Trade everybody and own all the future prospects practically. And you have a better choice of doing that, or you have an extremely long rebuild ahead of you, and that's what the Royals are going to face at the end of this year, because in my mind, like you said, I don't see them beating Houston. I don't see them beating the Cleveland Indians, or the Red Sox, or the Yankees, and I don't even know if they're going to make the wild card at the moment, because what you need still is Jason Vargas to continue doing what he's done for the first 4 months of baseball, and that's a challenge in and of itself.
And then you realize it's Jason Vargas at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I liked Vargas when he was on the Angels, but I mean, he's not this type of pitcher and he's been falling. This is the first year he's actually performed for the Royals, and he had a four-year contract.
You're basically waiting for Vargas for the clock to strike midnight on this Cinderella story for Vargas this year.
And that's when you have to sell. You sell those players that are over the top killing it. Moustakas is one of the top home run guys. Vargas made the All-Star team. That's a shocker in that one sentence alone.
Never thought you'd see the day, huh? How you like me now, Mets?
But, yeah, so I completely agree with the Royals on your pitch. For me, I'm going to take the New York Mets. You know, they did trade Addison Reed, which I'll ask you about in just one second. But Jay Bruce, I mean, this is a guy, 262 average, 29 home runs. One of the top 10 in the MLB in home runs this season. You sell that. Because at the end of the year, as much as the Mets could say, we want to bring back Jay Bruce for the outfield position or maybe first base, he'll do a little bit of both with Dominican Smith coming in towards the future for the Mets. But the Mets, you don't control that. He could go somewhere else. And then you didn't sell a 29 home run guy. That, to me, is the worst move you can do when you clearly were trying to sell. You traded Addison Reed. You finally traded a piece. But you have to continue doing that. And I think the Mets fell short on that one, especially when it comes to Jay Bruce. They could have sold, you know, half the team. And I think all Mets fans would have been totally fine with that because they want to get towards the future. But not selling a 29 home run guy when you could easily try and re-sign him the next season. And no matter where he goes, he could still want to come back to the Mets after that, after his year with 29 home runs. But I think the Mets missed big time on trying to trade Jay Bruce.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Bruce is that, obviously, and it was weird because there wasn't really a market for him either. I mean, how do you not have a market for a guy who's almost nearing 30 home runs is beyond me. I think the price tag was probably a little bit high, but at the end of the day, I think the Mets deserve to have that price tag on him because, I mean, this is a guy that's raking right now. I mean, he's killing it right now, and you don't sell that guy for short just because you don't have to. And as much as they didn't like Jay Bruce when they make the trade, I feel like maybe he is a plus to have, and I actually think Jay Bruce, who originally didn't want to come here, is actually really liking New York this time around, and I think he likes being on the New York Mets, and I can see an outfield next year of Cespedes, Conforto, and Bruce, especially with how well Conforto's played center, how well he enjoys playing center. He said that himself. So I see a scenario where Bruce ends up on the Mets back next year.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing for the Mets to re-sign Bruce, but I'm just saying that if you have a chance to sell 29 home runs, you sell it. But I want to go back to what you just said. There may not have been a market for it. J.D. Martinez gets traded, and he gets traded on an undervalue, and mainly because the Tigers only were going to get a fourth-round pick if they qualified offered him. Eduardo Nunez didn't get traded for much, and this is a guy that's, you know, 20-plus stolen bases, a decent power hitter, as well for the Boston Red Sox from the Giants. But guys like Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, Yonder Alonso, Lucas Duda got traded, but again, for the 30th ranked prospect of the Tampa Bay Rays, and Jay Bruce is sitting there. Why do you think there's not much of a hitter's market for the moment?
You know, honestly, I'm not sure. I think what it comes down to, I think it's more of a people trying to be greedy with their prospects. They want to hang on to their big-time prospects. You know, back in the day, you know, you wanted the ball boy, you would throw your first ranked prospect at him. I mean, people gave away a prospect like it was candy. I mean, but nowadays, there's such an importance on prospects that I think people want to hang on to these guys. I mean, the A's were asking the Yankees for Torres or Frazier in any deal that involves Sonny Gray, and now here we are, Frazier and Torres are still on the Yankees. I think teams are saying no when they come to the first and second prospect, and teams are like, okay, if I'm teams, I think the reason why guys like Hosmer, Moustakas, and even Bruce is still around is because teams like the Royals and the Mets stood their ground and said, well, this is the price tag. If you want someone else, go get someone else. And I think other teams did. I don't necessarily think there's a lack of market for him. I think the price tag was just a little bit too high. But I'm not going to blame teams for having high price tags on guys like Moustakas, Hosmer, even Jay Bruce, so to speak, because if the stats are there, you deserve to ask for that. Don't sell just because another team needs him.
Well, also, I think one thing that we see changing in the playoffs is, you know, starting pitchers aren't going deep into playoff games.
No, not at all. The relief market's on the rise.
Yeah, and that's a huge selling point. We saw that last year, especially at the Yankees when they traded Chapman and Miller, and both those teams, the Indians and Cubs, played each other in the World Series. But I think that's what's key. You know, pitching, good pitching will always beat good hitting. I think that's always been the standard. And nowadays, you're not making your starter go 7-8 innings in the playoffs. You're having them go 5 or 6. You're just having them face the lineup maybe twice or maybe at most 3 times around. and you go straight to your bullpen. And we saw the Yankees trade for bullpen pieces. We saw the Cubs trade for bullpen pieces. We're seeing starting pitchers get dealt. So I think for the playoffs, we're seeing more of a need for pitching, much more than hitting. And I think that's tougher on teams, especially when you have the Royals or the Mets, when you have Jay Bruce or Lucas Duda, and you have Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas, and you can't trade these guys. And I think that's becoming more of an issue for teams, and I think teams are going to have to look to do trading players away almost before the start of the season is when you're going to get value for hitters. Because if you can't get value for Moustakas and Bruce, who are two of the top 10 guys in the MLB in home runs, where are you going to get value for hitters?
Yeah, I mean, it's insane, and I mean, right now, the Blue Jays just put, you know, Jose Bautista on revocable waivers. And I think they're waiting for the price tag to fall. I think they're waiting for teams to feel like they have to trade them and try and catch them by an ambush. But if you're the Royals and Mets, you know, stay on your ground. Keep your price tag where it is.
And staying with the Mets, they traded Lucas Duda. They traded Addison Reed. And it seems like the Mets are making the right moves. They acquired four pitchers, and a few of them more like relief pitchers, but hard-throwing relief pitchers. What's your take on the two trades?
To me, I like the trades, and I've been saying earlier that the main focus for the Mets, a lot of people are saying, oh, they need more starters, they need more hitting. I think it's the bullpen. Let's just face it. This Mets rotation is not what we thought it was going to be. We thought it was going to be four aces, dominating, throwing complete games, flamethrowers. Sorry, Mets fans, and I'm here with you in the same boat. The Mets pitchers are not who we thought they are. These guys are fragile. They get hurt every year. They get hurt at least once a year. And when you have a fragile rotation, guess what the game plan needs to be? You need to take a page out of the Royals' book. And how do you do that? Build a strong bullpen. Guys may not have a large workload if they're only facing the lineup one or two times. If I can get six innings out of guys like Harvey, Wheeler, Lugo, Gazelman, anybody, and let Syndergaard or DeGrom throw seven every time out, and you have a decent bullpen behind them, all of a sudden that's a formula for winning. When you have a fragile rotation like the Mets do, you need to strengthen that bullpen. And really, the Mets don't have a good bullpen. I don't remember when was the last time I looked at the Mets bullpen and thought, this is a great bullpen. I have total confidence in them. Every year, I scratch my head saying, what are we doing with the bullpen? And you know what? It sucks to lose Addison Reed. I think Addison Reed, his attitude fit New York. A lot of New York Mets fans liked Addison Reed. I loved Addison Reed. Every time he'd finish the inning, you know, pop his hat back. It was cool. He was a cool guy on the mound. And, you know, but you have to trade him away, obviously. You got to get something for him. You got to do something. They were able to rob the Red Sox, you know, and one of the greatest heists in my opinion. But again, I think the Red Sox overpaid for Addison Reed. But you got three prospects. No, they're not 1, 2, 3, but they're 18 through 30. And reading about them, some of them are already on the cusp of coming up to the MLB in September or even next year. You don't have to go after number one relievers, you know, in prospect wise. You just need guys who are going to be able to get guys out and throw strikes. So I like the three guys that they got from the Red Sox. I like the guy that they got from the Tampa Bay Rays. And it's building a better bullpen. And in a trade that catches everybody off guard, they get A.J. Ramos, who to me, a beautiful trade. You trade away Miranda Gonzalez, who, yes, was a good prospect for the Mets, number 9 on the list. But you're not going to need starting pitching for the next couple of years. You don't need a guy that's only pitched at Brooklyn last year and Columbia this year. He's still ways away. You don't need him yet. So you dish him out for A.J. Ramos. You trade away an outfielder who was still unproven in the Brooklyn Cyclones. He gets traded away, and you get a guy. You get a closer who's capable of closing games, who, in my opinion, if Familia came back right now, Ramos is the closer. But obviously, Familia will probably keep his job. You can put Ramos in the eighth inning, and now all of a sudden, you're building a better bullpen. I think there's tremendous upside from the Mets relief corps now. I really like Broadford. I think he's good. I'm still very high on Smoker. Robles needs to go climb in a ditch, and I'll help dig the hole and dig him in. And other than that, I think...
And Blevins has been key.
And Blevins is going to come back next year, too, because Alderson Club finally...
Option.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, they're going to pick that up. I think you're looking at signs of a better bullpen next year. Yes, these guys are not big names that they got from Duda and Reed, but these are guys that are going to help, and I think help is finally on the way for the Mets. I love that they got Ramos, because what it showed you was Alderson saying, hey, like the Giants, we're not a bad team. We had a bad year. And one little quick fix here and there, and all of a sudden we're back in a playoff race.
Yeah, and I think that was a great moment for the fan bases. But, I mean, also, you trade away Reed, you trade away three prospects, then you get Ramos, and you trade away a couple prospects, and it looks like you got the better part of that deal, because you said a highway heist of getting three prospects for Addison Reed. And
yeah, and you told me on my show last week, or I think it was 2 weeks ago, that you couldn't even probably get one for Reed.
Yeah.
In your face, my friend, because they got three prospects somehow.
I would have took a patch of gum easily in that sense. And yeah, the way Sam Nelson pulled that off. That was great. I still think he should have traded Jay Bruce at the end of the day. But I think one of the other things that they finally did is they called up Ahmed Rosario. And, you know, I'm not really going to jump into a lot of roster changes, but Rosario, one of the top prospects in baseball, how important is him coming up to the Mets?
To me, it's very important. Why? Because, first of all, he should have been up back in June, and maybe you save the season if you bring up Rosario. But no, the Mets don't want to do that because they're cheap. To me, it's important because you need to give the fan base reason to believe going into next year. This is a very down year for New York Mets and the Mets fans. After going to the World Series in 2015, made the wild card game last year, the slogan for this year was all in, unfinished business, blah, blah, blah. It was a lie. You lied to our faces because you didn't do anything when the team was floundering. You didn't make the adjustments that you needed to make. Like I said, I'll keep pointing to the Dodgers. Adrian Gonzalez went down. Who'd they call up? They didn't sign some veteran off the waiver market. They brought up Cody Bellinger. And what did he do? He ignited his offense and probably one of the reasons why the Dodgers are where they are right now. That's what good teams do. They do what's best for the ball club. What's best for the ball club was to call Rosario up back in June when Cabrera couldn't find his way on the field, when Reyes wasn't hitting at all, when nobody was hitting for this team. You should have brought him up. You didn't. Now you do. It's great to see him up, but this is one of the reasons why I wanted the Mets to trade away Asdrubal Cabrera, because some of the rumors were that we couldn't bring up Rosario because Cabrera and Reyes, you know, they want them to have playing time. They didn't want Cabrera to complain. Cabrera's still here, though. So what was the point of waiting so long? It's what's pissing me off about the delay of calling up Rosario. And when you look at it, you know, the Mets, they don't want to say it's about financial stuff, but you look at it, the Super 2 deadline has passed. Therefore, his arbitration is pushed back. It's all pointing towards signs that the Mets were too cheap to call up Rosario early. So now they call them up now because it financially makes sense, which really angers you sometimes as a fan to see your team taking that approach.
And yeah, I think this is a good move by the Mets. I think that Cody Bellinger, Aaron Judge, you're seeing these top prospects come up. And
even if it's for a week, you see teams demote them right after. And you're like, oh, but you know they helped that team for the week.
Trey Turner was last season. I mean, you have to do it sometimes. There's an understanding if you can't because the team is stacked, like in Austin Meadows when he's one of the top prospects in baseball, but he can't come up because there's Gregory Polanco.
Yeah.
Andrew McCutchen, and then Starlin Marte. But the moment Marte gets suspended, you know, Meadows is pretty much coming up until he hit the DL. So you have to do that as a team, and the Mets clearly fell short of that, and I think Met fans are extremely happy to see him up, and I think it was silly on sentences like, you know, fans shouldn't be overthinking or overhyping the player. The kid's a top five prospect in all of baseball. He's the number one prospect on the team. We can overhype him all we want because his expectations are supposed to be high at that
point.
When
there's proof that he's great, we can overhype him.
Yes.
I mean, his minor league numbers are really, really good. It's not just some kid that
got off the international
list.
It is Las Vegas, mind you, but I mean, still, extremely impressive.
Yeah, but his average was way over 300. It's not like he had 50 home runs and we're expecting him to hit 50 again. No, I mean, yes, the air is thinner or whatever in Las Vegas. It's a better hitting ballpark. But he's still a high average hitter. I mean, this is a guy that's going to bat leadoff for years to come.
Yeah, and I think the Mets so need that as well, and they get a good defensive shortstop, and it sets them up for the right path to head towards 2018, and I think that finally gives the right taste in the mouth for Met fans that, you know, we're going on the right track. It just took, you know, 4 extra months and a whole season. But, you know, moving on, I'm going to read you a quote from Dallas Keuchel that was said on Tuesday after the trade deadline. You know, I mean, I'm not going to lie, I'm disappointed. It is a little bit of an understatement. I feel like a bunch of teams really bolstered their rosters for the long haul and for a huge playoff push. And us just kind of staying pat was really disappointing to myself. Does Keuchel have a point there?
Yeah, I think he definitely does. I mean, and we heard rumors that the Astros were in on Zach Britton, but they couldn't get a deal done. That would have been incredible if they could have landed Britton. And I understand the logic. You know, you look at the Houston Astros going into this year, they were the team to beat. This is a stacked team. And they still are. You know, the Astros are the team to beat still in the American League. Even with all the injuries that they have, they suffered a lot of injuries, which to me kind of worries me just a little bit. But these guys should be back by the playoffs. My thing is, though, is that like Dallas Keuchel said, you're watching everybody else do something. And you're seeing them get better. And so let's take the American League, for example, because that's what the Astros have to worry about. They're going to win the West, no problem. But, you know, Cleveland adds Joe Smith. makes their already good bullpen better. You see the Yankees, they add Sonny Gray, they ramp up their bullpen, Yankees are better now. The Red Sox, they add Addison Reed, makes them better. Once they get a couple guys off the DL, they're better now. So everybody around you is getting better, and you're just standing pat. Yes, the Astros are still the team to beat, but wouldn't you rather better yourself and make sure you have a vice grip on the American League title, on the American League, and make sure you punch your ticket to the World Series with an even more dominant team? I mean, the Astros didn't need much. They could have gotten a mid-level starter, a 3-4 kind of guy to help that rotation out, and a reliever, not of the caliber of Britton, but they could have gotten a good reliever to help this team out. So for Dallas Keuchel, yeah, he has a point. I really don't like him with being... I mean, the one thing I didn't like about Dallas Keuchel's comments is they seem to kind of like almost kind of like jab at the GM. You don't want to do that. You know, you want to trust your GM and stuff like that. But I understand the frustration where this is a team that was, what, 3 outs away, 6 outs away from going to the ALCS a couple years back, and they choked in the bullpen. For as good as the Astros are, the bullpen seems to be the weak point for them. It would have been nice to see them add a reliever.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team that a couple of years ago traded, what, 5 prospects for Ken Giles?
Yeah, see how that worked out.
You know, I mean, Ken Giles has been pretty good this year as their closer, but overall, Lance McCullers on the DL, Carlos Correa's on the DL, George Springer's on the DL, and you can live without Springer and Correa, and those are 2 of the top 5 AL MVP
candidates. And it's sad that you can say that sentence.
Yeah, that's how good of an offense they have when you consider that Aaron Judge is the favorite for the AL MVP, and then the 2-3-4-5, or 2-3-4 is going to be Jose Altuve, Carlos Correa, and George Springer this season. Like, that's how impressive that Astros lineup has been this year. But Dallas Keuchel just got back from injury. He's only going 3-4 innings right now. He's struggling as of right now. Lance McCullers is on the DL. You know, Brad Peacock, he's finally going back into rotation. He's been amazing this year for the team. But I think what also really stands out is you're talking about an AL West team that's going to win the division. But who do they see the most? The Athletics, Sonny Gray. The Texas Rangers, Yu Darvish. They know they're 2 of the best pitchers in baseball, and they see these guys constantly. And what do they see? One gets dealt to the Yankees, and the other one gets dealt to the Dodgers. I mean, that's got to be the real part that gets hurt at that moment. Because I get it, if you don't want to trade for that big of a name, possibly. But what about the St. Louis Cardinals and Lance Lynn? I mean, he's a free agent at the end of the season. You could easily talk to the Mets about a couple guys, but I'm not going to say the Astros don't have prospects. They've got plenty of prospects.
Yeah,
still.
And that's the frustrating part. When you know you have prospects to trade away, why didn't you?
Yeah, and in a couple of years, they're not going to have many prospects. They got a couple extra this year thanks to the Cardinals' picks from the draft and that whole spy issue and all. But, you know, they still have a couple of prospects. They still have a good team. They're not going to have as good of prospects in the next couple of years, but their team is amazing right now, and you've got to go for it. When you have 69 wins and the best record in the American League, and you still have the best record, and you don't have Springer, Correa, and you missed Dallas Keuchel for a little bit, and now your second best pitcher is out, I mean, that stands out, and you're not doing the right moves. So I think this is highly disappointing, as Dallas Keuchel said. And I think for the fan base, it's a little bit on, you know, for the last couple months, all it's been, you know, Astros, Dodgers, and now it's like, well, the Indians are back, and now the Yankees, and now the Yankees are picking it up, and Boston's, you know, hitting well, and we didn't do a thing.
Well, I mean, to me, the bright spot is I think the Astros are still the team to beat in the American League. I still think we're looking at an Astros-Dodgers World Series, and sadly, earlier this year, I made a prediction saying Astros-Cubs World Series, Astros win it all. I'm still staying with the Astros. I think they'll make the World Series, except I think the Dodgers are going to make it now. It's probably going to be Astros-Dodgers, and I can't say that if the Astros take on the Dodgers that I'm picking the Astros to win that series.
I took Washington versus Cleveland, so I'm a little bit on far away off on the consensus.
You need some help there, but
yeah,
it's okay.
I still like Washington. Still like Washington on that standpoint. And as a Met fan, I took Washington, so that's the epitome
of it
all.
That hurts.
Yeah. Before we go into beard bats for a moment, I want to just ask you one further question. All right. Which team is most likely going to not make the playoffs out of the ones that stand?
Ooh.
And I'll read them off for you to help in just for a moment. Boston's leading the AL West. You have the Yankees and Then you also have the Tampa Bay Rays as the two wildcard teams. You have the Cleveland Indians 2.5 games up on the Royals. The Astros are 15 games up, so I think that's a pretty solid one as the one to pick. The Nationals are 12 games up on the Miami Marlins. The Cubs are leading their division just by 1.5 games. And then the Dodgers ahead of everybody in the world. And then the Diamondbacks and the Rockies are for the two NL wildcard spots. So, Jose, is it almost set, or is there a team that might not be able to hold through?
Yeah, I think the divisions at least are almost set. I think, you know, Cleveland doesn't have a giant lead in the Central, but I think eventually they'll pull away. To me, what you're looking at is the two wildcard spots. Colorado holding the second one in the National League, and Tampa Bay in the East. As much as I would love to see Tampa Bay hang on, and in the end, I think they would. I think if anybody's going to lose their spot, it'll probably be both Tampa Bay and Colorado. You're looking at a team like Colorado where, yeah, the offense is great, but that starting pitching staff is horrendous. I mean, and not horrendous in a bad way, but this is a very young pitching staff, not playoff proven, not playoff stretch proven. I really wanted Colorado to go out there and get a starting pitcher. They didn't need to go get Yu Darvish, but they could have gotten somebody, you know, a mid-tier pitcher for the rotation, and they didn't do it. You have a lot of young pitching. Your most experienced pitchers are who? Chatwood and John Gray. And those guys have never seen a playoff stretch to save their lives in MLB. So to me, I think Colorado, you know, one late push by the Milwaukee Brewers, I think, can really push Colorado off the brink. Or another team maybe, you know, a sleeper team that's still hanging around. You know, let's say, I don't know, probably not the Mets, but let's say a team like the Mets, if were to make a late push and win 10 out of the next 11, all of a sudden you're looking at something dangerous there. But the same thing with Tampa Bay. This is a team that I feel like Tampa Bay is a more complete team, but they do have some guys that are injured. And don't sleep on teams like Baltimore. Don't sleep on teams like Minnesota or the Royals too. You know, those teams are right there with Tampa Bay. And I, you know, as much as I like how Tampa Bay, they made the trade for Duda, love it, but I'm not sold on them holding on to that second wild card spot. If you ask me to pick one, though, I'm picking Colorado. I really do not like – I'm not a fan of that rotation. So if I'm going to pick one team, I'm going to say Colorado, but really keep your eye on both of the wild card teams.
Yeah, Colorado is 5.5 games up on the Milwaukee Brewers. I really love the addition of Jonathan Lucroy, though. I think that's a guy that can really help establish that pitching staff and really, you know, pin spot the ball really well, get the right calls for the team, and – you know, like you said, a young pitching staff, sometimes you need that veteran catcher. And a veteran catcher that can hit like Lucroy, that's even an added addition. 5.5 games, that's a lot for Milwaukee to make up. They're closer in the division, but I think the Cubs are finally going to start rolling through the entire division and really start picking up. For me, I'm looking at the Kansas City Royals and the Tampa Bay Rays. You know, only a half game separate these two teams. Kansas City technically has the half-game lead, but I'll give it to Tampa just because they have one more win than Kansas City. That's the closest one because Kansas City, Tampa, half-game differential. Seattle Mariners are just 2.5 games out, and the Angels are 3. So there's a real tight race in that second wildcard spot. So Tampa Bay is my team that could possibly fall off. You know, they made a couple moves. I like the Lucas Duder acquired pickup on the team. They added a bullpen piece. I really like that they weren't trying to sell this year because they shouldn't be. They have a ton of starting pitching going into next season that they have no reason to be a seller. So that's my one concern is the Tampa Bay Rays because there's just so many good teams in the American League that are just fighting for that second wild card spot.
Yeah, I totally agree. And again, you know, it's that wild card spot. I love it. The one game playoff, one of the most, I know a lot of people don't like it. They like the 2 out of 3 series, but I really love that one game playoff. If you want it really badly, you go for it for the last game.
And now we'll take it to Beard Bats for the first time.
And now it's time for Beard Bag. Scratch those goatees and find out what's hiding in the beard from back in time.
Alrighty, so Beard Bats, we're going to go back in time and, you know, not too much happened in August 4th in bat, but one thing that really stands out to me is we're going really far back, 1910.
Just before I was born.
Just before. A's Jack Combs and White Sox pitcher Ed Walsh pitched a 16-inning scoreless tie. I mean, we don't even talk about Corey Kluber pitched 9 innings yesterday, and that's a surprise.
We're praising that.
And that's a surprise of he threw 9 complete innings. Like, that's something we haven't seen in almost the entire season, and it's a rarity in and of itself. And these guys are throwing 16 shutout innings each. So I think that's extremely impressive. And in 1934, New York Giants' Mel Ott set the record of 6 runs in a game as the Giants beat the Phillies 21-4. So that's a nice, fun blowout win for the New York Giants in that matchup. So that is our Beard Bats. And one of the other big things that we have as well is
Dude and Dunce of the Week.
Self-explanatory there. Every week we're going to choose a dude and a dunce of the week. Probably, again, self-explanatory. The dude is someone or some people who have done something great in the week of sports. And a dunce is someone whose desire, you know, intentions leaves a little to be desired. So, Nick, who did you choose for your dude of the week?
I'm going to take Paul Goldschmidt after yesterday's performance. You know, a 3 home run game, 6 RBIs. And, you know, the game was tied 8-8, and then it went into a rain delay and comes back into the 9th inning. Paul Goldschmidt comes up to the plate, hits a solo home run to give the Diamondbacks a 9-8 lead to win the ball game against the Cubs. And again, this is a tight situation for the Diamondbacks because they're so close with the Rockies for that first wild card spot, and that's going to be really important for either team, who will eventually play, you know, the Dodgers. But for me, it's Paul Goldschmidt. I love the tweet by the Cubs where they said, "We promise not to pitch to Paul Goldschmidt tomorrow." So that, to me, was my favorite part of even after the 3 home run game.
Yeah, and for my dunce of the week, it goes to, you know, it's our first podcast. We're both Mets fans. It would only be fitting if I gave it to Mr. Terry Collins for the first time. So, Terry Collins, congrats. You're my dunce of the week for the first episode of our podcast and many to come. Because why? You put in Hansel Robles last night. Hansel Robles, I believe he got the first 2 outs of the inning, then walked the bases loaded, then suffered some kind of weird injury, and then threw a wild pitch, walk, whatever it was. Point is, the Mets lost yesterday, and the reason why he's the dunce of the week is for this quote saying, "That's not the guy we know out there. I don't know why he's pitching that way. That's not the guy we know." You're right, that's not the guy we know, because the guy we know would have given up a grand slam to end the ball game in grand fashion. Hansel Robles is probably one of the most terrible pitchers in New York Mets history when it comes to relief, and we've had some bad ones. Braden Looper, Armando Benitez, yes, I know he had the saves record, but, you know, but I mean, we've had some bad pitchers in the history of the New York Mets, but Hansel Robles, I think you take the crown for one of the worst pitchers the Mets to ever have in that bullpen. And I'm kind of being a little bit too harsh. Robles has had his moments, but this is a guy that can't be trusted, and for Terry Collins to think that he can trust him really baffles me. So Terry Collins, you're the dunce of the week, and by the way, I'm betting Robles not on the Mets roster next year.
Yeah, you know, Robles, what's strange with him is he actually has like 5 or 6 wins for the Mets, but I think you have to, yeah, I know.
It's obviously when I'm not watching, because I never see anything good of this kid.
But what's amazing from yesterday's ball game is I think he said like he couldn't feel the baseball at one point in his hand, and he's not telling the team. I think that's kind of important at that point. Like,
yeah, that would raise a red flag for me. I mean, I'm no medical expert, but when you can't feel something from your hand, I think there's a problem.
You're a pitcher.
But I don't know. Again, I'm not a doctor, so I can't really put my comment sent into that.
Yeah, so this has been the first episode of Sir Austin and the Beard.
And also, before we sign off for the show, we just want to thank our good friend, Pete, who put together our logo for the show.
Yeah, Peter Girard made the logo for Sarasso and the Beard, and special thanks to him because we love the logo and a big part of it. As well, Jose, you mentioned earlier in when we started that you can always email us at Sarasso and the Beard. As well, we're on Twitter at Sarasso_the Beard, so you can always tweet at us. And like you said, if you guys come up with any questions for us to ask on the show, we will say the questions, we will answer the question, and we'll also put your even the Twitter account on it for thanking you for asking the question. So always possibly tweet at us.
Yeah, and make sure you follow along with the show on Facebook.com/Sarasso and a Beard. Like the page, share with your friends, share with everyone you know. Follow us on Twitter at @C_TheBeard. Sarasso_TheBeard, my bad. And you can follow us on Instagram, too. I'll let you know what the Instagram username is as soon as I remember it. So next week's episode, I will definitely have the Instagram username for you guys to check that out.
Sarasso_TheBeard, I believe that's the Instagram.
Oh, okay,
they're all pretty much the same, so awesome. It works out real well.
And again, you know, we're going to have an episode for you guys every single week, so don't worry about us. We're going to do our part, do your part, and make sure you tune in. Thank you for all the those who are supported, and thank you for all those who will be tuning into this first episode. Very excited. Closing comments before we sign off for the show. For me, it is now day 1,365, and Colin Kaepernick still does not have a job. Baffled. You?
Yeah, that's something we should definitely be talking about in our second podcast. We'll go into football on that one. To me, I'm extremely surprised by that, and it's, you know, not right in that sense. And Ryan Tannehill did it. Was injured yesterday. He's most likely done for the season.
It's gotten to the point where if a quarterback gets hurt, we glue our eyes to the TV to say, well, you're going to sign Kaepernick now? Like, it's, I mean, some teams, well, we're going to talk about it next week, I guess.
Yeah, well, we definitely will break it down a lot next week because we like to try and stick with one sport for each podcast. But
I was getting a little bit overzealous.
Yeah, something that we definitely both are opinionated about, and it's really surprising.
So, yeah, that'll do it for this week's episode. Catch us again next week. I'm Jose Rivera, a.k.a. The Talking Beard.
I'm Nick Sarasso.
And thank you so much for tuning in to Sarasso and the Beard, the best podcast to ever embrace your headphones. Mark it down. Signed off by the number one critic in the world, Kanye West. Just kidding. He didn't listen to the show yet. But nonetheless, thank you so much for listening.
Using an overpriced trash bag?
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks?
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag?
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
You gotta snag Hefty's Ultra Strong Trash Bag. Always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
It has Arm & Hammer odor control, so your nose and your wallet will be
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong Trash Bags. Hefty strong all day long.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!